I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
I want you to know that the mothership has landed.
It's DA on CBS Sports Radio.
What's up, my brother? I want permission to come aboard the mothership.
Asking permission to join a sports talk spaceship? Well, we're all a little crazy. The mothership has connected.
The mothership. Let's come aboard.
And we come to you live from the Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loan Studios. When you want the ability to adjust your loan options in real time, Rocket can. Thanks so much for being with us, everybody. DA with you here on a happy Thursday. And coming up in 20 minutes, we are stunned to a news. And 1 hour from now, I highly encourage you to stick around to listen to Jeff Perlman, the author of the new book, Three Ring Circus, about the Kobe and Shaq dynasty and the ensuing breakup, because it is a really interesting deep dive into the dysfunction of that, of those years and that dynamic between Shaq and Kobe. And in the passing of Kobe Bryant, there were so many wonderful things said about him and written about him, and understandably so, and rightfully so. So the timing of this book is so interesting, but the book details just how problematic both Shaq and Kobe were to the success of that team, that they were so great, but also could simply not coexist. And today in 2020, Shaq grieves the loss of his former teammate and talks about, you know, their bond and their relationship, and things certainly had cooled over the years and they had seemed to come to a common ground. But when you read through this book by Jeff Perlman, it is eye-opening just how bad it was. He goes into a story of a pickup game where Kobe's calling out Shaq for not being a real leader. Shaq's calling out Kobe for being a punk bleep. And at one point, Shaq takes a swing and slaps Kobe in the head. And it leads to nearly an all-out war where those in attendance said that Shaq, had he caught Kobe and not it had not been broken up, would have wanted to kill him, literally rip him limb from limb. There was jealousy. There was animosity. There was bad blood. And now we don't talk about that because things have been cooled over. And of course, Kobe is no longer with us. But the book is a startling recount of how that actually came to be. So we're going to talk to Jeff Perlman about all of that coming up on the show 1 hour from now. And Jeff's done some great books. The last time he joined us was his book on the USFL. And I think you might have to be of a certain age to really have appreciated that interview and that book. But if you're of my age, which is probably 40 plus, you remember the USFL of the mid-80s. And all of these great players that played, future Hall of Famer Steve Young and Jim Kelly and Doug Williams and Sam Mills, Reggie White, all these unbelievable players that played in the USFL. Imagine future NFL Hall of Famers playing in the XFL or the Alliance. Well, this is what that was. Herschel Walker, Mike Rozier, Heisman Trophy winners, Doug Flutie. And the league was a total gong show. It was a total gong show of misfit owners and terrible practice facilities and nobody in attendance and weird TV deals and guys not getting paid and felons playing. I mean, it was nuts. And the book called Football for a Buck was great. I loved it. So we had Jeff on the show probably 2 years ago, and it was just so much fun. So I'm really excited to have him back on for the first time since then for his book about the Shaq and Kobe Lakers called Three Ring Circus, 1 hour from now. Shaq and Kobe's Lakers ended up with three rings. It should have been more. It should have been at least five. They should have been able to win in 03 as well and then lost to the Pistons in 04. Spurs toppled them in 03. By 04, they're clearly the better team than the Pistons, but the Pistons were a better team, T-A-M and T-E-A-M, and ended up winning, you know, that series. And I can't even spell team. So I look at this series between the Heat and the Celtics, and I wonder if the Celtics are an amazing collection of talent, but not quite a team right now. And the Heat are playing much more like a squad that's together, that's built for one another, to complement one another. I say this because last night in a game four, which is really crucial for the Celtics. I mean, it's really, really crucial to not fall behind 3-1. We did see the Nuggets do this twice in this postseason. It can be done, but, you know, 3-1's really difficult, obviously. 2-2 is a totally different can of worms. And the Celtics have already lost their first two games of this series. And I look at the Celtics, and it's impossible to ignore the high-end talent on this roster, that the Celtics are built, as Danny Ainge would hope and, you know, tried to build, of a team with potential superstars all over it. That no doubt he saw something in Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum that maybe others didn't quite value as much, but those two guys are the number three picks in the draft. So Ainge and his compatriots have felt like those are superstar caliber guys. You don't draft a guy number three overall and don't expect him to be a cornerstone of a franchise. And Jason Tatum flirts with superstardom, but then last night goes 0 for the first half. Tatum was drafted number three overall. Jaylen Brown, drafted number three overall. Marcus Smart, drafted number six overall. Kemba Walker and Gordon Hayward were signed as free agents, but they were drafted number nine overall. And those guys had been steady stars of the NBA. They had not won big because they were with Charlotte and Utah, respectively. But everybody in the NBA knew who Kemba Walker was. Everybody in the NBA knew what Gordon Hayward brought to the table. Danny Ainge has assembled a big collection of talent. And at head coach, Brad Stevens, who is a darling of the media, and a guy that rarely, you know, gets criticized in the NBA. So you've got five guys on the floor at times last night. Now, granted, Gordon Hayward's coming off of the injury, so he's kind of being fit back in. But there's five guys there that were either proven commodities in the NBA or top six draft picks where everybody said that that guy's got star potential. And they're down 3-1 to a 5 seed. And you've got a Heat team that is nobody on that roster drafted higher than 13th, at least not of the significant pieces that are playing. Tyler Hero was the highest draftee out of those guys that played last night, important minutes, at number 13. You know, there's 12 guys that passed on the kid that just dropped 37 last night. Bam Adebayo, who is becoming the best player on the Heat, drafted 14th. That's nearly out of the lottery. Both of those guys, fringe lottery picks. Jimmy Butler signed a free agent deal, but he was drafted at the end of the first round, number 30. And he's always talked about how he's not kind of a God-gifted talent type guy, but a workaholic. Goran Dragic signed a free agent deal in Miami that at times has looked bad, but was drafted midway through the second round. And Duncan Robinson, who starts for them, undrafted, G League guy. And yet that five seed is one win away from the NBA Finals. with a G League dude, a second-round draft pick, a guy drafted at the end of the first round, and two fringe lottery picks. What do you say except that's a team that's playing well off one another and at any given moment has a guy that can step up. So last night it was Tyler Hero. In game one, it was Bam Adebayo and a block. It's been Jimmy Butler with big buckets. Last night, Dragic had a couple of very crafty, very important buckets down the stretch. Those guys all come together and just play well together. And with the Celtics, you know, you have Marcus Smart, who thinks he's Allen Iverson, who is just chucking up shots, even though he's not that good. He's certainly not an elite offensive player, but who cares? You have Gordon Hayward, who looked very good in game three, which was a win, which was his comeback. But last night, you know, some good step backs and some good, you know, big three-pointer, a little five-point barrage. But, you know, he's, since the injury, certainly has never been the star that the Celtics assumed he was going to be. Jaylen Brown certainly has fits of being great, but needing to be a complementary player. He's not a guy you can rely on to be, you know, an offensive, he's going to shoulder the load. Kemba Walker can be a liability at times. And Jason Tatum, who has the biggest potential out of any of those guys to be a super duper star, went 0-for in the first half. It was amazing his second half. The second half was great, but you know, Is he playing within the flow of the team, or is he feeling the pressure to be everything? And if he could be that inconsistent, what does that say about your best player on the team? I think the Celtics have all this high-end talent that doesn't necessarily fit together all the time. And Danny Ainge has been trying to just assemble the big talent to fit together. And I don't know if it's really working the way that Ainge had envisioned. And look, they've gotten to the NBA Eastern Conference Finals 3 out of 4 years, so that's good. But they have never gotten to the NBA Finals, and right now they're in a 3-1 hole, and that's bad. And they're young, and that's good. But Gordon Hayward probably isn't going to be sticking around much longer when this contract is up. And even if he did, what is he really? And I think, you know, when you look at the East, Hero and Bam are only going to get better. And can the Heat bring in another big name without trading those guys? Yes, the Bucks are the Bucks, and they flamed out two straight years, but they're going to be on a mission next year to win with Giannis in his final year to contract. The Raptors are obviously a very formidable foe, and you can't discount them in the East. And you know, you have a group of teams that are either better than the Celtics or right there with the Celtics. And the Celtics, with all of that talent, should be the best all-around team in the East. And they're not. They're just not. So I don't know if it's a chemistry thing. I don't know if they just need more seasoning. But because Brown and Tatum are very young. But whether it was Kyrie didn't quite fit, and then it was the Hayward injury, and now it's, you know, Kemba's time with the young guys. They just have never, they've never gotten to the level where it seemed like they were always poised to be. You were like, with all this talent, with all these savvy moves by Danny Ainge, they're going to be the beast of the East. And they're still not. Even this year, they were a 3 seed. So maybe that goes to coaching with Brad Stevens. I know the Boston fan base isn't thrilled with Brad right now. But Mraz, something is amiss with the Celtics where you can obviously look in the mirror if you're Boston right now and say, that Heat team is a team and we're throwing things at one another in the postgame locker room.
Yeah, I just wonder how different this series could have been, would have been under normal circumstances, and how much maybe the Celtics just mentally weren't built to handle being in a bubble this long with everything that comes with it. To me, that's the only conceivable explanation, because as you've pointed out and we've made the point, the NBA has always been about talent wins more so than any other sport, any other postseason. And yes, the Celtics have had shortcomings before under Brad Stevens. We've noted a ton of them. You can make the excuses about LeBron. You can make the excuses about Kawhi and the Raptors getting hot last year. there should be no excuse this year. And the only thing I could keep coming back to, and I think this would fall a lot on the head coach, is this has now been since the end of July in the bubble, and it's just a will of mental fortitude and something I just don't think the Celtics have much of right now.
Well, so I guess that's a way of saying what I'm saying is I don't know if they're a great team, that they're a collection of talent.
Yeah,
but a team inside the bubble doesn't get angry at one another. A team inside the bubble doesn't somehow wilt mentally. The team with the talent should also have the chemistry, but I don't think they do, and we're seeing a Heat team that has much less talent have the chemistry.
See, but I think there's a different variation of that. I think you could be a great team on the court as far as communication and passing and flows of the offense and getting back on defense and playing together as a team. And then I think there's a group of guys who have basically been living on top of each other within hotel rooms, granted, and having no break and no escapes from that that unhinge a team, right? I mean, the Celtics could have been a great team in terms of the team stuff, but now we're making a team how you act together when you are living with each other, like it's the show Big Brother since the end of July. I don't know that that's necessarily fair.
Well, I also, though, why are you pointing out the bubble as the reason the Celtics are losing? Because what about them being a three seed this year? I mean, they could have been a one or a two. What about the last couple of years when the Kyrie Irving thing clearly blew up in their face?
Look, I think at the beginning of the year, I hate starting this with look, we've had these talks with Andrew Kaplan, who was there as well. There was question about, okay, they might have had a better locker room without Kyrie Irving, but would Kemba Walker bring the same kind of star mentality that they had? They didn't stay healthy a lot. There was Gordon Hayward injuries throughout. There are reasons you could get to a three seed that don't necessarily have to do with talent. And I'm with you for the most part on the fact that they have extremely underachieved, especially in this Eastern Conference. I'm making it about the bubble now because you're seeing two teams now. You just saw the Clippers get eliminated, and you heard everything about Paul George and what wore on them in the bubble, and you're seeing stories about the Celtics throwing things in the locker room. It just kind of feels like, to me, the great teams that we expected to be great that are not looking the part as this process of being in the bubble has gotten longer, that's the only thing I contribute to is just these aren't normal circumstances, and mentally, you know, it's a test of both talent and mentality, and I just think the mental aspect of it for the Celtics has worn thin at this point.
Well, I think you're letting them off the hook because, yeah, certainly, you know, your lifestyle and your family life is different if you're not inside the bubble. But in some ways, this is distilling basketball down to its purest form. There really should be no excuses. And the Lakers aren't making excuses. The Lakers were the best team coming into the season, and they're on the verge of going to the NBA Finals. And the Clippers were clearly kind of paper tigers because they never were on the same page. They didn't have great chemistry. And Paul George has always been a bit of a loose cannon and maybe thought of himself more than he should have. And what we're seeing, you know, is that these problems exist within these organizations. And they're exacerbated perhaps by the bubble, but the bubble should also be a place where just basketball lives. And if you're a good team, it should be just about basketball.
I agree with that, but let me just then, I guess, counteract this. Do you believe under normal circumstances where you have an Eastern Conference final where the Celtics are down 3-1 to the Miami Heat? The bubble has nothing to do with that.
Well, that's assuming that these are the two teams of the Eastern Conference final.
Well, do you even think the Celtics would be in the Eastern Conference final? Because that's another part of it, too.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think so, actually. I think the Raptors would have won that series had they had the home court advantage.
Then that's a different argument. I think that's also fair as well. I think this is a combination of talent coming with, you know, different mentalities and surviving this mentally, and the Celtics are definitely lagging in one of those things right now. That seems abundantly clear to me.
Well, our poll question today is Brad Stevens part of the problem? And if this is an issue of guys getting annoyed with one another because they're inside the bubble, it would definitely fall at least partially on the coach. Do you think Brad Stevens is part of the problem? I'm not saying the whole problem, part of it.
Absolutely he is. Absolutely he is. Because if I'm going to make the case about this mentality and things being different, well, a head coach might be the most important part of that in keeping everybody's focus and togetherness.
I think he's part of the problem as well. And I'm not saying he's the entire problem because, you know, the players have to play and nobody could guard Tyler Hero last night, and that was just an out-of-body experience by a 20-year-old rookie. But I think it's impossible to say that a team with this much talent with the Celtics being down 3-1 is not at least partially on the coach. So you can vote on our web poll today. Go to @CBS Sports Radio on Twitter. Is Brad Stevens part of the Celtics' problems? Tomorrow, Dan Shaughnessy of the Boston Globe is going to join us. And, yeah, I'm sure he's going to sugarcoat things. I'm sure he's a guy that's going to wax poetic about the Celtics. He is a guy that does not mind speaking his mind and being negative. So this should be a lot of fun with Dano coming up tomorrow morning on the show. When we come back, we are stunned to a news. DA, CBS Sports Radio.
This is CBS.
It's the DA Show on CBS Sports Radio.
Listen to us in podcast form, meaning whenever you want to listen to us, if you miss an interview, miss a segment, want to hear it again, or just listen to the best of the show every single morning, you can do so. Just go to your favorite podcast platform and search the DA Show, and you'll find us there. Subscribe so it's automatically uploaded to your phone or your computer. And then, boom, you can listen to us whenever you want to listen to us. And if you have a chance, rate and review us. That helps other people find the podcast easier. We were talking about the pressures of playing inside the bubble. Dixie Landan tweets, think about it, DA. Imagine you and Mraz are stuck in that Airbnb from San Francisco a few years ago, and you're there for 3 months, and the only thing you're allowed to do is walk around the yard for the show. Would the DA Show go haywire? Think about the bathroom, DA, for 3 months. Okay, so a couple of things there. Number one, let's not compare living at a resort in Disney World to that Airbnb in San Francisco in the Tenderloin District, okay? Mraz and I actually witnessed a guy shooting a hypodermic needle into his shoulder, okay? So it was a different... We went out to brunch one day, and we were being followed by what appeared to be a pack of zombies. It was a terrifying... Nice. We ran across the street. It is not the same... There was a gate to get into an apartment and the gate was like wrought iron because it was such a dangerous area. That is not the same as jet skiing in Orlando at a resort. I think Mraz and I would actually be relatively fine if we were staying at a resort for 3 months.
Should also be noted that this was just before the boom of Ubers and Lyfts, and you had me in panic mode dialing a number we had seen for a cab company just a couple minutes earlier. Hey, call faster, Mraz, call faster.
Yeah,
we
were standing on the street outside our apartment being like, we're caught in the worst neighborhood ever. And if this guy does not come right now, we will be killed by these people.
And there was also a moment where we saw several, let's just call them number twos in the street. And I made a comment about what a big dog that must have been. And DA turned to me and said, Mraz, that's no dog.
Two.
That was what. So I don't think you're getting that in the world's bubble.
Just imagine for 4 nights, Mraz and I lived in the Thriller video. Every day we're just turning around looking at gravestones and people with sunken eyes come towards us, not saying anything, in tattered clothes. It was terrifying. So it's a little different. Also, I hate to break it to you, Dixieland Dan, but Marcus Smart and Gordon Hayward aren't sharing a bathroom. They have their own rooms as well. So it's not the same. They don't wake up like, you know, Larry and Balky and have to share a bathroom in Perfect Strangers. It's not like Marcus Smart is holding Gordon Hayward to the side of the building. Standing tall on the wings of my dreams. These guys have their own nice resort rooms, and they're staying and getting fed and everything. So for them to be splitting apart of the seams here because they hate each other, I don't know. It seems a little soft for me.
You know what? After that... Yeah, I was going to say, after that breakdown, I completely hate my take from last segment. I'm totally on your side. It has nothing to do with mentally. You should be just fine in that bubble.
Jeffrey tweets, everybody plays in the bubble. It's like playing in snow or any other adverse conditions. The Celtics, the window closing. teamwork, getting outplayed, individual talent, but that's a coach fail. Thomas tweets, the Celtics shouldn't have continuity problems. Kemba, Tatum, Brown, and Smart were together during national team prior to the season. Last night they looked lethargic like the Lakers the other night. Also, styles make fights not a good matchup for the Cs like the Heat would be for the Lakers.
It should also be noted, DA, it is very much on the table that the Brooklyn Nets win a championship before the Boston Celtics do after that trade.
That is such a good point and such a ridiculous concept that the Nets were completely fleeced, just fleeced by Danny Ainge. And you're right. I mean, next year, if KD is healthy and Kyrie is healthy, they would be the odds-on favorite to win in the Eastern Conference.
Right.
They'd be the face. And, you know, if they won a championship over the next 2 years, they could beat the Celtics to even just getting to the NBA Finals since the trade. Bogues, there's no way you could explain your way out of that one.
Yes, I can. We haven't even seen the Nets exist yet. Let them play a game with Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving, who, by the way, you blame for the Celtics' issues 2 years ago. They have a brand new head coach. We have no idea how he's going to work out. He might work out perfectly. It might not. But to say, I mean, yes, theoretically, the Nets could win one before the Celtics. But the Celtics are sitting in the Eastern Conference final right now. It's not going well by any measure. There's so many things to talk about this morning. You don't need to throw the hypothetical Nets mysterious championship out there to add on to this. It's completely unnecessary.
It's on the table, Bogus. You said not Kevin Durant and Kyrie.
I mean,
Durant
anything
take the
is
floor
on.
But
anything is on the table.
But it's not
the Raptors
not,
could win a second. And
but
I know
it's not like saying
the
Hornets could win the title. It's not like saying, you know, suddenly the Magic are going to win the title. What Mraz is saying is the Nets will probably be the favorites of the Eastern Conference to come out. So that's not a huge conjecture.
No, it's not a huge conjecture, but I don't think that applies to anything going on with the Celtics right now, nor is it needed to decide whether their window is closing or anything like that. I don't think it's no part of this conversation right now.
You like Brad Stevens, but let's take that out of it. Me and Mraz are much more lukewarm on Brad Stevens. You like him, but let's take that out of it. If you were just to go back to, I don't know, let's say 3 years ago, when it was the bottom of the barrel for the Nets and they had no assets and no draft picks because they had been heisted by the Celtics and the Celtics had just assembled this really good roster, and you would have said at that time, guess what? The Nets won a championship before the Celtics. It would have felt like an alternate universe. Like, that was not in reality, and all Mraz is saying is suddenly that's actually a reality.
Exactly.
I understand that it's a reality, but I mean, I think it's such a pie in the sky, like, hypothetical that it doesn't apply. Because, yes, I mean, anything could happen. And you can dismiss the Hornets, but any team like that, the Hornets, the Magic, if any one of them wins a title before the Celtics team does,
but
it's a knock on Boston as well.
But the Magic and the Hornets aren't the Nets, who would be the Vegas favorites to do it.
And also the connection is the trade. The trade where the Nets were slaughtered on it. And everybody said, well, now the Celtics are going to rule the East. That's the point. These teams and franchises will forever be connected by that. And if the Nets happen to win a championship before the Celtics, which, again, is on the table, I mean, it's a disaster for Boston after everybody said they fleeced them.
I understand. All I'm saying is, let's just get there first. Again, like, it's off in the future, and it may never happen. Like,
get
let's figure
first,
out
then why
now.
Why are we doing this? Then why are we doing sports radio? We're having sports conversation. It's a good hypothetical.
Yeah, because you could have a million
first
conversations without throwing out about going as far as the Nets could win before the Celtics. Look, yes, they could. Of course they could.
Is the Celtics
disappointment? To me, that doesn't matter today.
No. Is the Celtics disappointment not one of, if not, the biggest storyline in sports talk today?
Today, yes. Sure.
Okay, so then how is it not on the table to talk about what's next when they're one loss from elimination and how they could be dealing with that next year? How is that not fair?
Well, for two things. First of all, they haven't lost yet, and they are not going to survive this series. I get that. But let me ask you this now, because here's something that actually could happen far sooner than a Nets championship. What if the Miami Heat go on, and the Miami Heat beat whoever survives the West, and they win an NBA title? Then do you have to circle back at all and do any less critique of the Celtics because they lost to a team that was on a magical run that even LeBron couldn't stop? What about that hypothetical? Does that change anything? Does that make it less disappointing that the Celtics lost to a Heat team and then went and beat LeBron for an NBA title?
No, I don't think that there's any shame in losing to the Heat. The Heat are a really good team, and they're playing like it. And this could be a really good team for a while if Hero and Bam continue to grow at this rate. I think the point is, 3 to 4 years ago, certainly 3 years ago, when Danny Ainge had stockpiled all of those draft picks, had all of that cap space, and was going to swing for the fences, and then did draft Tatum and Brown and seemed to also totally dupe the Sixers as well in the Markelle Fultz deal, it seemed like the Celtics were set up to be an Eastern Conference dynasty. I'm sure I said that. And to be here 3 years later, and the Nets, by the way, were just trash and had no hope and would be in the dumpster forever. If you fast forward 3 years, when the Celtics get eliminated here, the Vegas odds for next year's Eastern Conference championship will probably have the Nets one and the Celtics below that. That concept, even right there, is a crazy thing dating back to where we were even 2 years ago.
Sure, but 3 years ago also, too, if I told you the Nets would eventually have Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant, you wouldn't believe me either.
But that's so the like, point, that they had no assets and they had no hope Celtics had all of the assets.
The Nets Celtics connection is always going to be there. The Sean's point about the Nets winning a title before the Celtics would be far more damning in my mind if the Nets won a title, I guess, on the same trajectory off of that trade. But A, the trade was forever ago, and B, the trade had no connection to the possibility of one day I'm going to have Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving on my team.
I disagree.
How do you disagree?
Because all of these things are interconnected. You have to realize, if you went back to 2015 after that trade and you looked at what the Nets had to build back from, complete rubble, they had no draft picks, they had no cap space, they had no assets. They didn't even have a coach or a GM.
The trade was 7 years ago.
Well, but you seven. Have you don't but you don't have to go back 7 years to where the Nets had no hope. The Nets had to piece together a front office, hire the right head coach, had to swing deals to acquire even mid-round to late-round draft picks because they were swindled in that thing, and they had to build something akin to a winner to even grab guys like Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving. Just that's a win in of itself that they could convince Kevin Durant, who, by the way, we know needs to win or else he's going to fight with every schmo on the internet. He wasn't going to a place where he couldn't win. He wasn't going to go to a rebuild. He had to go to a place where he felt optimistic. To have even gotten
there. And then brought in three other people he want to play with.
Oh, no,
he's not
of course.
Into, I want to be with Spencer Dinwiddie.
But hang on. You cannot say that if the Nets were a dysfunctional dumpster fire that he would have wanted to go there. You did know that he went there because they have a strong organization.
He went there, we thought, because he liked Kenny Atkinson, and Kenny Atkinson is now gone. So he's already changed the head coach. The GM who's in charge now wasn't the GM when this trade happened. So again, in 2013, when they're making a trade and working off of that and coming back from all of that, the idea of me having Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving one day, while yes, they wanted to put themselves in position to find stars, to me, there's too much time has elapsed,
folks, there's a huge hole in your argument, because if you had the choice to be Danny Ainge or running the Nets in 2016, you would have taken Danny Ainge, and everybody else would have. And so that's a losing hand you were playing. And if we fast forward 3 years later or 4 years later, and the losing hand is the favorite to win the conference, and the guy that you'd rather be is not, that's a story. That's a win for the Nets.
Of course it's a win for the Nets. It's not going to change the way, if the Celtics never win a title with it coming off, or even get to play for a title in the finals, coming off of all of they've done, all the things you've laid out, it's a failure, period. It's not going to change my grading of their failure, whoever else wins the title. If that's wrong on my part, then I'll eat it. But like the Durant-Irving marriage now in Brooklyn, which we still have never actually seen on the court, by the way, is still so far-fetched. I can't hold that against Boston. There's a million other things to hold against them if they never get close to a final. I don't need the Nets, any level of Nets success, to dismiss what the Celtics are, or assess what the Celtics haven't done over the last couple of years. If they go out in five games against Miami, You can do whatever you want about Brad Stevens. You can talk about changing rosters. I don't then care what happens from the Nets 2 or 3 years from now. Because again, we're still now we're even further away from the trade and further away from the rebuild. The Celtics by themselves are the issue. To me, the outside stuff, as connected as it may be, matters less to me than it matters to you guys.
Mraz is shaking his head.
I mean, just now I know what Katie Bogus is getting Andrew for Christmas. A lot of green underpants, because I didn't know he was such a Celtics honk. Who knew?
No. I'm not. Listen. It's almost a failure.
No. It's almost like you're Sean Bradley and Kaplan was one of the Monstars and he's taking your body and your talents and he's talking as Mr. Celtics mouthpiece through you right now.
But again, but here's the problem, right? Again, yes, and I do like Brad Stevens, but you're talking about him as if this team hasn't made the playoffs. They're right now in the Eastern Conference
Finals. So that's what we play for. The great Boston Celtics play for only the playoffs. You're talking about 2-3 years down the road. If they go a decade after that trade and have no hardware to show for it, it's an unmitigated disaster if the Nets are having freaking parades down Flatbush Avenue after they made that trade. It's a disaster. It's an undefendable disaster, and Brad Stevens is the damn face of it. That's it. It's end of it, period. End of story. End of discussion. You're wrong. You lose. Good day, sir.
It's a disaster no matter what happens to the Nets. That's my point. It doesn't make it, to me, it doesn't make it worse. Now, the one thing that
it doesn't have to make it worse. It's bad. They did nothing. They have done nothing but come up short in Eastern Conference Finals since that trade. And the team that was left with nothing attracted 2 free agents and are about to be the favorite to go to an NBA Finals. If, like I said at the beginning, it is on the table that the Nets win a championship before the Celtics did after that trade, that makes it more of a disaster. I don't know how that's arguable.
Also, I would argue this. That the Brooklyn Nets, since that trade, have developed lesser talent better than the Celtics have developed top talent. I mean, what they've done with Spencer Dinwiddie.
The Celtics are in the Eastern Conference Final.
Well, Bogues, Bogues. As I mentioned before, the Celtics have 5 top 10 picks. The Nets had none of those, and they brought D'Angelo Russell back from the dead. His career was over. They found Spencer Dinwiddie, and they made him into a legitimate player. They found Caris LeVert, that nobody had any idea could be anything, and he's an all-star. They found Jared Allen late in the first round. They've done more with less than the Celtics have, even though they haven't gotten as far in the playoffs. The Nets have had nothing close.
I think that's a preposterous sentence. The Celtics are in the Eastern Conference Final again. I don't know how you can say this is my problem with the whole thing.
They've got more talent than anybody else in the East.
Do they?
Yes. Yes. Nobody else has 5 top 10. Nobody else has 5 top 10 picks. Roster. The Bucks are trying to make Chris Middleton a superstar, Bogues. Nobody in the East has 5 top 10 picks. 5? Are you kidding me? Most of them don't have 2.
The draft picks.
The Nets have two top 10 picks. It's Kyrie and Kevin Durant. They haven't even drafted their own top 5 picks.
I just don't know. There are so many things you can critique them about being down 3-1 in this series. Eric Spoelstra's been a better head coach. You can absolutely say that the Celtics need one of their secondary third level players to be Tyler Hero. Where's Jaylen Brown's 30-point game? Where's Kemba's 28-point 15-assist game? Those are all valid points. I don't know why I have to go as far as throwing Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving in or telling me that the Nets have done better with their talent than the Celtics had. Why do you have to go that far?
We're arguing the same thing. We can just sit here and say that the Celtics' talent is not living up to its potential. And you and I can agree on that.
Currently at the moment, 100%, yes. Now, I've given them a pass for losing to LeBron. I don't know who gets blamed for letting Kemba, for letting Kyrie mess them up. This one is on them. I also think that the bubble could be an issue, so we disagree on that as well. But this one is on them. But like right now is on them. To me, you go too far sometimes. And you don't need to have all these huge haymakers. You've got a million jabs you could throw at them right now to knock them down for being down 3-1 to the Heat, who appeared to be an inferior team, but maybe they're not.
Well, maybe they're not, but I mean, I think what we would probably agree on is that the Celtics have more talent in the series, and they're losing 3-1, and this will be two straight years that they didn't get to the NBA Finals when LeBron wasn't in the Eastern Conference. So you can't even blame it on running into LeBron.
No, you can't. You can blame it on them. I just think in different ways than you guys are. That's all.
All right. Well, we are going to not do Stunned to a News here because we're late on this segment. So why don't we just do the headlines and we'll swap Stunned to a News to next hour.
All right, that sounds good. Everything is sponsored by Progressive Insurance. Drivers who save with Progressive save over $750 on average. Call or click today and find out if we could save you hundreds on your car insurance. It was a heat win last night, 112-109. They have a 3-1 lead now in the Eastern Finals. Game 4 tonight for the Lakers and Nuggets. LA leads that one 2-1. Thursday Night Football has Jacksonville hosting Miami. That's an 8:20 Eastern kickoff. From baseball, if and when new Mets owner Steve Cohen takes over, he has hired Sandy Alderson to be team president. Alderson was the Mets GM from 2010 through 18. He'd oversee baseball and business operations this time. The current Mets lost to the Rays last night 8-5, so Tampa Bay clinches the AL East. The Phillies snapped their 4-game skid, 12-3 in Washington. They're now a half game behind the Marlins for second in the NL East and a game behind the Reds for the second NL wildcard spot. DA, back to you.
Thank you, Bogues. Well, that was good. That was feisty. That was good for a Thursday morning. When we come back here on the show, the passing of a legend, Gale Sayers, and what his legacy is that he leaves behind at the age of 77 after he passed away yesterday. DA, CBS Sports Radio.
This year like last year, the best is right here on CBS.
It's the DA Show on CBS Sports Radio.
And our toll-free line is 855-212-4227, sponsored by GEICO. Did you know that right now GEICO is offering an extra 15% credit on car, motorcycle, and RV policies? That's on top of what GEICO could already save you. What are you waiting for? Visit GEICO.com to learn more. Yesterday, the passing of a legend, Gale Sayers, who in such a short amount of time reached such amazing heights. He came out of college from KU as the Kansas Comet, drafted by the Chicago Bears, actually drafted also by the Kansas City Chiefs at a time where the NFL and AFL were battling for talent. And there's a great story that George Halas, Papa Bear, has about those negotiations. And what Gale Sayers accomplished in such a short amount of time is nothing short of remarkable. Let me play for you a clip from NFL Films.
Papa Bear George Halas was not about to let Sayers get away.
We did draft Gale and Lamar. Hunt also drafted him. Well, I knew Lamar had something like $500 or $600 million, and I was concerned whether he'd use that dough to help get Gale Sayers. I was very much concerned about it. Then I saw a game film of Gale in action, and I never saw such moves in my life. And I made up my mind right then and there. Lamar Hunt and all his dough won't mean a thing. I'm going to get Gale Sayers.
Those who admired Sayers realized his style, while beautiful, was deadly. Watching him run through the avalanche of bodies was like watching a deer run through a minefield. Ultimately, the inevitable happened.
Now you tell me, is that not art? NFL Films, my goodness, chills. The writing, the voice, the music, and of course the highlights. What they're alluding to there is the ultimate injury and injuries that Gale Sayers would suffer. Just to put into this context, Gale Sayers essentially played 5 seasons in the NFL. His final 2 years, he played a total of 2 games in each and barely got onto the football field. So he plays essentially 5 relatively full seasons, although one of them is a 9-game season out of 14. So he plays 4 14-game seasons and 1 9-game season, basically. In that amount of time, he is an All-Pro all 5 years. He has suffered an ACL tear in the middle of that he actually comes back from at a time where that was, you can't play football anymore. To come back to run for 1,000 yards, many people say one of the most amazing things ever they've seen on the football field is Gale Sayers, all about speed, quickness, and agility, ripping up his ACL in the mid-60s and coming back to run for 1,000 yards after that. But he was never the same. Gale Sayers, in 5 years of the NFL, in a 14-game season, essentially was playing 3.8 modern seasons. He played essentially out of a 16-game schedule, 3.8 16-game schedules. Five-time All-Pro, first ballot Hall of Famer, and is a member of the NFL's 100 team. He was a member of the NFL's 50th, 75th, and 100th all-time teams. That's what he accomplished in basically 3.8 modern seasons. Never, ever, ever been anything like Gale Sayers. When we come back, fascinating stories about the Shaq and Kobe dynasty with Jeff Perlman next.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.